and I just learned the best spell of all.
What's that?
Sleep.
Good evening. Welcome to My Alchemical Bromance. I'm Eric Arneson.
And I'm Joey Harrison.
And tonight we're not actually going to be on the podcast because our Grand Lodge tells us that we cannot communicate Masonically with unrecognized lodges. So instead we've brought on a guest host, the amazing and mostly bald Cadman Webb. Say hi, Cadman.
Hi, Cadman.
And so we're leaving. We're going to leave you in control of the podcast. We're going to go drink some beer around the corner, and then we'll be back.
Sounds like a good plan.
All right, bye.
Alrighty.
Bye.
So, hi.
Hi.
As you have just heard, my name is Cadman, and I am filling in for recording here on My Alchemical Bromance. Tonight, we are talking about masonry, about which I know nearly nothing, so this is an exciting trip for me. And discussing the inclusion of females, women, into... What? Oh, what did I do?
Nothing, you're fine. We're just...
We'll fix it in post. so we are talking about masonry with Heather and...
Valerie,
who are here today.
Hello.
Hi. Thank you for that introduction. It was fabulous.
I'm glad you think so. So before we get into this, let's learn a little bit about you. From where do you hail, and what lodge are you in?
My name is Heather Fulton. I am part of Seattle Evergreen Triangle, which is in Seattle. And we are both part of Le Droit Humain, which is Freemasonry for men and women.
And I am Valerie Espinoza, and I am from California. So my lodge is Amor Sapienta, which is in Pasadena.
Cool. And what ranks do you hold? Ranks? Is it ranks?
Degrees.
Degrees. Yeah. Okay. What degrees do you hold?
I am a Master Mason, third degree.
Okay.
And I'm a Fellow Craft, second degree.
Cool. So, because it's part of the theme, we should ask, what are we drinking tonight?
Ah, yes. So, we have a Crater Lake handcrafted pepper vodka infused with fresh peppers. And it is delicious.
It's quite peppery.
Yes.
Yeah.
Peppery.
Yes. I've noticed that it somehow manages to, like, cover the burn of drinking straight vodka with the burn of eating straight peppers in a way that is remarkably soothing.
It blends well together.
Yeah, it really does.
And now that I've had plenty of that, I'm on water, which is thankfully tasty. So, shall we completely, inarticulately segue into our next portion of this talk?
Smooth.
Thank you.
Yes, wonderfully done.
So, the first question that is on my mind, having learned just a little bit about masonry today, is, and I understand if this is considered crass, but it apparently comes up with embarrassing frequency when discussing the existence of female masons and mixed gender lodges. So, how do you handle bare breasts during initiation? Are there topless ladies in your lodges?
Yes, we do all our rituals completely naked. And we don't know why more males don't join. It's weird. We can't understand it. It's strange.
It's really bizarre.
It's really strange.
Okay.
Just kidding. No.
No. I mean, I'm absolutely prepared to believe anything that you say right now. I enjoy is stories. So feel free to fill my head with all sorts of...
Nonsense?
If you
magical
want.
Nonsense?
Absolutely.
Fabulous.
On it.
You want to take
right.
Sure.
Go ahead and then I'll jump in after.
So we do not go topless in our lodge. The ritual mentions bare breasts, but nothing specifically about nipples.
Yeah.
And as a friend of mine, actually Mary Newhall from our lodge in Seattle, well, Triangle in Seattle, pointed out, if we took the rituals literally, none of us would make it through the third degree. So you don't actually go topless. But what we do is we leave the rest of the breast from above the nipple, somewhere around there, whatever is comfortable for people, up. So the entire shoulder is bare, arm, you know, from the neck down to across the chest. I'm making motions
like
here,
like
which nobody can see.
It's like a halter top, and men just don't get fashion, so it's no surprise that this is a question, and it's like their number one question. It's like the burning question.
Yeah.
Which is surprising that they haven't come up with better questions. Just kidding.
But not really.
So, to me, it looks like you're gesturing in a way that sort of outlines the shape of a toga as worn by, like, fraternities.
Bingo!
And that seems like a very reasonable garment for anyone to wear. That's kind of the point of a toga, now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
So, okay. So,
perfect.
Like,
good
attire
analogy.
Is not really a big issue, then. You wear clothes, is what it sounds like.
Yes, we wear clothes. Unfortunately, sorry to bust any fantasies that may have been floating around out there.
I mean, like, we've all, never mind. We can get into that.
We can move on, I think. I think we've answered
okay.
the question.
So, to be more serious about, like, masonry as a whole, I wish I had more vernacular for this.
You're doing
but
wonderful.
Let's discuss terminology. So, are some of these terms that I am going to read off of this list offensive to you in any way? And, like, are some more than others? I'm just going to, like, read them off and then, like, get your initial reactions to them. And then maybe we can discuss the list as a whole if there's anything interesting in there. Clandestine.
No, I mean, it's in our obligation as much as anybody's.
I think he's talking about in reference to our lodge, like somebody calling us a clandestine order.
No, I don't take offense to it.
To me, I don't take offense. Offense would be rather pointless at this point. I think we all understand why we're in these positions and how we got here as a society. It's frustrating in some ways that we still have these variances, but it's completely understandable at the same time. Clandestine, I think specifically because it is in parts of our ritual as a term that you would not, you know, countenance or otherwise communicate with someone who is part of a clandestine group. It's difficult to, I don't enjoy hearing us referenced as such, but
it's
not
enjoyable,
don't.
But it's
yeah.
acceptable. I mean,
yeah, it is what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been called worse, I guess.
Agreed.
I was about to ask you as a Mason or as a woman, but I really don't want to get into that conversation right now.
Just say Mason. Just say Mason.
Okay.
Just leave it at that.
Word B is irregular.
Prefer that one.
I prefer that one over clandestine because we're not regular. You know, we do things a little bit differently, and differences kind of make the world go round, so it's more agreeable.
Yeah. I would agree.
Okay. Regular.
Preferred. I mean, no one's going to call. I would prefer that, but I don't. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't care.
Okay.
I mean, I think I care, but like, yeah, I mean, it's,
like,
there's bigger fish to fry.
So if somebody, I really don't, I don't know how this would go. If somebody like came up to you and referred to you, like asked you, so like, are you a regular Mason?
Yeah.
Like, what would that mean to you?
I would say, yes, I am, and then they would look at me crazy. And I'd be like, okay, I'm a regular co-Masonic. I mean, if that makes people feel
In Le Guadalupe, we are regular.
Yeah.
Like, okay. In our order, we are regular Masons.
Yeah. We feel we do the same work. We're very serious about it. We're very passionate about it. So to us, it's regular Masonry. There's, really, we don't see the difference.
Yeah. Properly dedicated and regularly assembled. And
so, insofar as an individual could feel like a Mason, you guys feel like Masons.
Yeah, insofar.
Okay.
As one could, we do.
Because, I don't feel like a Mason at all.
Oh, that would be weird. It would just be awkward.
Yeah. Okay.
That would be
so perhaps this is a good segue into my next word. I don't know. Recognized.
Also great.
It's not really offensive, but it's frustrating because we work really hard. Most of us in the order take it very, very serious and we bleed it. So to not get that recognition can be frustrating, but when you step back and just think of the world we're in and the society and just how far we've come, we just had a woman run for president. That's never happened before. So, just take it with a grain of salt and pray that society shifts a little bit over the next coming, year or century. Century, maybe.
Yeah, I'll take either, but yeah. But this is how we would feel about being called recognized, right? Or is it not?
I assume so. I read the question verbatim, and as we've discussed,
fine.
I really don't understand the nuance. So, I guess we can get into that a little bit more. Would you like to be recognized as Masons? Walking around on the street and have someone go, oh, hey, I bet that's a Mason.
No.
Or, so it's a matter of, being recognized as Masons by other Masons from other lodges?
There are Grand Lodges that will recognize, they will consider lodges recognized or unrecognized.
So this is some sort of a formal process.
It's a formal
term. It's very political.
Okay.
It's very political.
Yeah. And no, we do not, I won't speak for you, but I'm looking at you and I'm assuming we're kind of on the same page. We're not walking around looking for recognition or affirmation or approval.
If we wanted to, so let's say there was an interesting lecture going on at the local lodge and it would be nice to be able to go and sit in on it and be recognized as a fellow Mason. That's more what I mean by the recognition. Yeah, maybe I understood you wrong, but that's what I meant.
Yeah.
To be recognized as brethren, as,
okay.
Part
yeah.
of it.
You feel that you all, work in the same space, share mm-hmm. many of the same ideals as part of this Masonic community, mm-hmm. and you would just like for parts of that community to be you are, we are all Masons together.
Yeah, that would be great. Then, we can spread more knowledge and learn from each other and, as a community, be able to, reach more through volunteering, through services, through charity. It's co-masonry is quite small in the United States compared to traditional masculine masonry, so we don't get to reach as many people or what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. A perfect
platform.
Example is that I travel from Portland to Seattle every month, which is a 3.5-hour drive, to go to a lodge, Triangle, but
mm-hmm.
And Valerie actually flies to LA from Portland.
Yeah, so if we were recognized, we could go to, a stone's throw away from our house lodge and be active in it and work with them, and that would be great.
So if I'm to understand this correctly, because your local lodge is not a part of an order that includes women, you can't participate in events and gathering and work that they do there.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. And that is, like, a question of, like, being recognized by that lodge as somebody who is part of their
by their federation.
All right. So, how does this reflect on, I'm beginning to see how these, like, topics flow together, on keyword mainstream, .. masonry?
I've never actually heard that term used, so I don't have a personal...
I've heard it used mainstream. They're like, well, it's traditional masculine masonry with the American Federation, and they consider themselves to be mainstream Masons. It's heard a lot in the East, probably why you haven't heard a lot of it here. Mm-hmm. And in California, I've heard it quite a bit. So it's just like, you know, what it is, mainstream. And I mean, I don't really take it offensive because that's it's like the original. It's not like there's
some sort of radio station of top 40 mainstream Mason pop hits.
I don't think so.
Okay, because I've...
Now I hope that happens.
I do. Maybe we can convince these guys to make
it happen. Eric and everybody else, when you're listening to this,
make it happen.
Is your next project.
All right, I want to hear a cover, a Masonic-themed cover of Wannabe on the next episode.
I don't even know what that is.
I lied. I don't want to hear that.
Well, you might.
Uh-oh.
Careful what you wish
for.
Okay, so like...
Make it happen.
To get back into what we're actually talking about instead of pop hits, there is like... There are some people who will refer to as... like, masonry from the area or from the, like, lodge lineage of a single point or area of origin as, like, the mainstream masonry, or did I completely mishear that?
I don't even know what you just said.
Great.
Let's move on.
All right. What is liberal Freemasonry?
I guess we are. I don't know.
That's another one of the listed ones you're
that
asking.
That is on my list, and that's what I'm asking you.
I'm assuming it's us.
I think in any group of people, I mean, at least in our current zeitgeist, you have liberals and conservatives, or at least some sort of scale therein.
Mm.
And when I hear liberal Freemasonry, I think it's mostly referring to the way you might refer to the left politically. I might be wrong. Again, there's some of these terms that, like, I just haven't heard a whole lot. But I'm assuming that it would just be referring to the left, effectively. Democrats or, you know, liberals in general. And the sort of, like, masonry that would come along with that branch of thought. Which I certainly would not be offended by. I mean, I definitely am liberal myself, but I also don't in any way think that that applies to our order. Like, we welcome all people of any school of thought, religion, what have you, and we're all working together towards the same goals and doing the same ritual. So it's probably not applicable, but I'm not going to fight it.
Well, even in the traditional mainstream masculine masonry, you know, you have different orders that are conservative and liberal. We were just talking about this earlier before the podcast, I'm sorry, about how in the South there's super conservative Masonic lodges, and they are beginning to de-recognize Prince Hall lodges as well as... homosexual males. So, you know, you can even take it one step further and say that those are very conservative lodges, whereas, you know, a lodge probably in the Portland area would be a little bit more liberal in accepting the Prince Hall brothers as well as homosexual brothers.
And I would actually do a quick plug here for anybody listening. The Ex Oriente podcast is a group by some fantastic... male masons, brethren, who touch on these subjects. So if anyone would like to hear more from a group of like-minded folks on the topics that Valerie just spoke about, that's a really great podcast. They're a great group of guys.
And
Ex Oriente.
Do not get any money for that.
No.
Promise.
No, I actually, like, pay money.
You pay money to hear it.
But yeah, I would agree. Yeah.
So, different Masonic lodges are, like, very influenced by... I suppose this makes sense because it's true of
everything.
Any community... they're, like, very reflective of the culture of their area, because that's the culture of the people who populate it.
Mm.
And so, because you're all under this, like, umbrella culture of Masons, there are deviations of schools of thought within that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And we already, we touched on it a little bit, because it's kind of impossible to talk about one side of a coin than the other. But the last item on my list of talking points is conservative Freemasonry, which it sounds like is very much culturally related to anything that has been, like, branded with the liberal conservative division in our...
Yeah, they're pretty rigorous, but they're pretty rigorous. Yeah, they're not gonna budge. And if any of the masculine masonry organizations were to ever, hopefully one day, consider allowing, you know, women, it would be more of the liberal orders than the conservatives. The conservatives, they're not willing to change anything. Even if it's to their greater good, you know. So.
Well, and I also, like, it's a complex topic, right?
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
I've had this conversation with people over the years quite a bit, and, like, there's no individual that can change something like that. And the individuals that would possibly have views of it that go against the current status of things are putting themselves at risk by even discussing those sort of things. And it's kind of built into the system to, like, not... For its own protection, you know? The original lodges were in the hills with people with swords standing and protecting from cowens and eavesdroppers and making sure that people throughout history have had a safe place to talk openly about what they learn in their travels or whatever. When, you know, governments and the powers that be don't... aren't necessarily friendly in much more dramatic ways than what we're experiencing now. So, like, it makes sense to me that it's been protected from people that are not members and been very careful in who is welcomed in to such spaces. But now, at this point, you know, it's difficult because the male order is international. I mean, as are we. But if you're looking at wanting to make a change, you can make changes to your own group, but you are then separating yourself, potentially, from, you know, you're not just talking about Portland, you're talking about not just the South, not even just the U.S., you're talking about lodges in the Middle East, for example, or, I don't know, I'm sure there are lodges in North Korea, like, so it is allowing women is a, and not any change to such a complex system that has been around for so long and has many reasons for being as protective of itself as it is makes some sense in some ways. So it's, I agree that there is much that we could share together as just as like-minded people in doing the work, but I also recognize it's a difficult, like, process.
Oh, yeah. It won't happen anytime soon. I mean, just like the Prince Hall. I mean, it was a long time coming for those brothers to get recognized, and there's, you know, still some issues, and just like anything, it'll take a long time to iron itself out and for the Federation to really even contemplate the change. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Many years coming.
But in the meantime, there's plenty of other orders and groups and like-minded, you know, spaces where we can connect.
Thankfully,
Yeah.
Co-masonry has been just a wonderful thing for me. And I know a lot of other women, not only women, but men too, who really find it just the place to be. It's like home, right?
And it's really wonderful when, like, any sort of community, whether it's masonry or an arts community or even, like, a community center or a church or a group of, like, people that meet at a bar every week, it's really nice to be able to turn a collection, like, a random collection of people and a geographic location in which you reside into a place that feels like home.
Yeah.
And, like, having a large group that connects you to people and ideas is a big part of that. So it makes sense that finding that in Freemasonry is one of the things that brings you back and keeps you doing the work.
Absolutely.
So what was it that originally drew you to Freemasonry? Like, what was the thing that made you go, I'm going to be a Mason?
I went first last time. You went first this time.
Okay. Well, there's so many things that brought me here. I've really been obsessed with Masonry and the symbolism involved within it for almost as long as I've been alive. So it feels as though I've seen these things lifetimes over. It's just that instant recognition. And I never really understood what they were or why I was obsessed with them. You know, just completely drawn to the mysteries, theosophy, philosophy, geometry. These are deep-rooted within me. You know, these needs to find out who we are and why we're here. So I know we were here to do more than what I was previously doing, but I don't think the time was right. You know, in my earlier days, I was living very haphazardly, making my way through life. And it was just this internal battle. You know, my soul and my mind weren't really seeing eye to eye, just feeling very lost. And I remember always seeing the Masonic lodges and having male members of my family who were Masons and just being really heartbroken because I couldn't join this thing that felt like it was part of me. And I didn't really make the correlation at the time, but I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready because I hadn't tamed like my lower nature and tendencies just quite yet. And it's just strange how, as I got older and I did change for the better, you know, Masonry, even though I kind of gave up and was like, oh, forget it, I'll just never be, and like moved on with my life, like, sadly, you know, Masonry didn't give up on me. And it's just the minute that I changed myself for the better and, like, just really became a better person that the order of LDH found me, like, really found me. So, you know, it's kind of like a seed waiting in the ground for, like, the right sunlight to pop out.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, it's a good analogy.
Yeah.
So, like, as you were growing up, you had this familial connection to Masonry.
Mm.
And as you, like, grew into yourself as a person, the connection to it sort of found you, like, mm-hmm. as you were ready to step into what it is that you do.
Yeah. And it's interesting because a lot of people would be like, well, why don't you just join the Order of the Eastern Star? And I was like, no, I'm not just going to be, like, you know, this lady of a, you know, like, I don't know. I don't know how to explain it, but something in my soul was just like, no, like, stomped its feet.
I know,
like,
that feeling. I can, that's something, like, right in here.
Yeah.
It just was like, it didn't resonate. I don't know how else to put it. Nothing against the Eastern Star.
No.
Beautiful
organization. I have family in it, and
yeah.
Gorgeous, and it's great, but it was
just
and,
didn't
resonate. Did it resonate in my cells of my body, you know? And
yeah.
And it's interesting because I don't see gender, and I know that's crazy, it's not crazy, but I don't know, I just don't feel like I'm well, defined me, by it. You
to
know?
Me, I think on a more intellectual level, aside from the, you know, emotional or physical state that occurred when I thought about joining that order and how it just didn't feel right, if I analyze that a bit, I think, how to word this exactly? I think for me, personal work and growth, and in my opinion, spiritual growth, is part of that is learning balance.
Yeah.
And balancing your nature. And we all have, you know, everything in existence has the masculine and feminine aspects to it. Just the two poles. And we certainly, everybody embodies both masculine and feminine. And so it makes sense to me to be open to both of those energies, both internally, externally, on the physical plane.
Absolutely.
So having, I wouldn't want to, if I was, whatever gender I was, I wouldn't want to limit my own personal work to a single gender.
Yeah.
I just feel like having that balance in internal and externally is just important.
Yeah, exactly.
To me.
So what was it exactly that brought you to Masonry in pursuit of that balance and personal development, Heather?
Oh, my turn. So my story is a little wooier.
Wooier?
But similar. I actually, growing up, I grew up very fundamentalist Christian, actually Messianic Jewish, my family converted to when I was about 13. And I, in my late teens, just kind of, like, pushed all that aside, went, I can't deal with any of this. Any of this makes sense. I'm a very analytical person. So, like, I spent most of my youth reading the Bible again and again and trying to, like, rectify it, taking it literally and just finding contradictions and bumping up against walls, especially, like, trying to learn Hebrew so I could understand it more. And it just got to be too much. And then I was suddenly a teenager and parties happened and I set everything aside. And I think it wasn't until, like, I guess it was, like, if you believe in such things, my Saturn return. And I was living alone for the first time. And I actually went through, I'd moved up to Portland for various reasons and was going through my first winter. And it was a really dark period. And it was, like,
symbolic.
Yeah, it was definitely the dark night of the soul.
Yeah.
For me. And I also didn't have any vitamin D and, like, lived in a basement.
For those who have never visited Portland in the winter, when daylight savings time hits, because we live in a valley, it suddenly goes from getting dark at, like, 6 or 7 p.m. to very rapidly turning, like, midnight black at 4:30 to 5, sometime in mid-October, which is very, very jarring for
Super
those of
rapid.
Us who moved here from California.
Like
me.
And it's cold and wet, and it doesn't stop.
Until July.
Until
then.
July.
Maybe August.
Yeah.
We'll see this year.
So, as you might understand, it's rough.
Yes. And I was going through my first one. And didn't know to take vitamin D or anything else, and had just moved up from very sunny Southern California. And ended up going inward quite a bit and analyzing, like, what was... When you're kind of... I was living in my own apartment by myself, and it was a basement apartment. It was a nice apartment, two-bedroom, but still a basement apartment. And I worked from home, and I just hardly got any sun. And I started kind of wondering, like, what was troubling me. And I think, you know, what was stressing me out. I mean, ultimately, part of it was definitely, like, not having the brain chemicals to, like, deal with the stresses of life. But what it made me do was, like, look at things that I had kind of set aside, such as my upbringing and my religion and what I believed about reality and the afterlife and just all these things that I'd been kind of raised with. And I had... at that point in time, kind of, like, I had this moment where I looked up at the stars and realized, like, okay, this light that's hitting my eyes is, like, a bajillion years old. Like,
it's amazing.
The 5,000-year-old bullshit from my upbringing is not going to fly internally anymore. So I
started
like
asking questions.
Asking questions. Yeah.
Logical questions.
Logical questions.
Seeking logic. Yeah.
Seeking logic, yeah. And towards the end of this, like, winter, I think it was in March, I had this, like, really challenging moment where I came up against trying to figure out what it was I was doing, like, what I was even seeking. I had this, like, I could tell I, like, was desiring something. Like, internally, I could feel this,
that
like,
pull.
A pull.
Yeah.
And I just, like, sat in my room and, like, really went inward and looked at that and just, like, tried to figure out what it was and realized that internally I was still praying. Like, the way that I was interacting with this, like, trying to ask myself what I wanted was, like, in a praying to what I still had the structure of as, like, this terrifying, you know, godlike figure that was, like, ready to judge me at any moment. And when I realized that wasn't what I wanted to interact with, and I set that aside, I asked myself, well, what are you seeking? Like, what do you want? That was basically what I was asking myself. And I just, like, sat there for probably, like, 20 minutes, like, asking that over and over and over internally.
The answer to the universe.
Yeah.
That's what you want.
And I got this answer, this very clear answer. I had my eyes closed, and I saw this little, like, spark of light, and I got this really clear word with, like, truth, which is a capital T, truth. And I realized, like, that's all I wanted. That's all I was trying to get at. Like, I don't want any of this, like, fluff and fill of people telling me this is what actually is. Like, unless I can feel that it's true, like, fuck
it. It has to resonate with you.
Yeah. And that was a very, like, for me, that was my initiation. Like,
oh, yeah.
That moment,
we get initiated,
like,
way before
initiation.
I mean, way before.
Yeah, exactly.
And that leads you on the path.
Right.
Like, that's the knock on the door.
That was the knock on the door.
Yeah.
And within, I think, two hours, I went back to my computer and I was, like, working. This was just my lunch break at home. And I was finishing out my work day. And I remembered that there was actually a Rosicrucian video that I had seen that reminded me that it had been talked, like, there were, it was an image of a rose, and there was, like, no, it was actually just a rose in this video, and the sunlight, and something about the memory of that video, and this little spark of light that I'd seen, made me Google that, and I remembered that my, grandfather and great-grandfather and his great-grandfather on my mother's side, the Whitlock family, had all been Freemasons, and on my father's side, up above him, going back,
yeah.
It was just long-standing in my family.
Yeah.
So when I did this Google search, Freemasonry came up, and I went, oh yeah, I wonder what that's about. Like, I remembered I had, like, a family tie to this, and my mother had actually just passed away, and my father, who is not a Mason and believes it is the devil.
Is he the Christian fundamentalist?
He is the Christian fundamentalist, yes. Yeah. Anyway, he gave me, because he didn't want it in his home, my grandfather's briefcase and this little wallet that he had, and it just had an extensive amount of his just little notebooks and things and, like,
his Masonic
secrets, but just, like, pamphlets from talks and things that he'd been part of. So I looked it up and I tried to find an order that would allow women and came up to the Eastern Star and didn't feel right.
Didn't
and everything,
feel right.
Nothing felt right. I actually ended up just Googling specifically Freemasonry for Women International, and it brought up the Le Droit Humain International site, and I had to reach out to the
Federation
in France.
Mm-hmm.
And they sent me to Seattle Evergreen Triangle. And so that was kind of what drew me in. And then just talking, when I talked to actually Angela and Wilson at the Seattle Evergreen Triangle for the first time, because I was still very much like, this feels right, but I'm
no idea
very
what's going
like,
on.
Yeah, like, I'm like pretty analytical about things at this point. So I was just like, well, I'm going to talk to people and check in with myself about it. And they were just fantastic. Like, we talked for probably, like, 45 minutes, and we were supposed to just do a quick phone interview, and we just, like, ran off on esoteric topics, and I was like, yes, this is, I want to go talk with these people more.
Yeah.
That's basically what we do. I don't know about your lodge, but we basically work, we do the ritual work, and then we talk about esoteric, like, random ass shit that's interesting and beautiful, and try to grok, to use a term from the book I'm reading right now, Stranger in a Strange Land, grasp wholly the truth of the universe and what the hell we're all doing.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my long answer.
Okay. Man, there are like two big subjects that I want to pick up on from these answers. The first, I hope, is a quick fill-in. What is the Order of the Star? Was that the thing?
Order of the Eastern Star.
Order of the Eastern Star. What is that? And, like, so you say that you found that on your path to Masonry, and it didn't, like, click. Is that, like, is that, like, the Girl Scouts to the Boy Scouts kind of thing?
Okay, so apparently how it started was, and this is super sexist, but this is...
Maybe we shouldn't go here.
It's okay.
Okay.
It was basically the men didn't want their wives, like, pestering them or, like, they wanted to know what their wives were doing. It was something along those lines, so they created this, like, mock order which doesn't perform rituals as far as I am aware of, but they do, like... like
here.
Prayers, and then they cook the food. I don't know. It's
here.
It's something.
Let me read to you from Wikipedia.
Okay, like. Thank you. Wikipedia knows all, by the way.
So Order of the Eastern Star is a Masonic dependent body open to both men and women, established in 1850 by lawyer and educator Rob Morris, a noted Freemason. I'm going to skip a little bit. Members of the Order of the Eastern Star are age 18 and older. Men must be master masons, and women must have specific relationships with masons. Originally, a woman would have to be the daughter, widow, wife, sister, or mother of a master mason, but the order did not. But the order now allows other relatives, as well as allowing Job's daughters, Rainbow Girls, members of the Organization of Triangles, New York only, and members of the Constellation of Junior Stars, also New York only, to become members when of age. So it... Regardless of the reasoning for why it was created in addition to Masonry, but not within it. So it is an appendant body.
Yeah. And they don't do the work. I mean, it's more...
That is what I have heard.
Yeah,
I have never been in Eastern.
Yeah, I was drawn to the work of the craft. And as a seeker, trying to, like... know the answers to the universe and the desire to be a better person, the best version of myself, and then to inspire other people, I just didn't find that sat well within those boundaries.
it was not what I was looking for.
Yeah.
I know there are a number of women from Eastern Star who come to talks locally and are wonderful members of the... order as a whole.
And
it
fulfills them, and they love it. But
yes.
Some people are just, we're all on different paths.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we all have our own ray. You know?
Yeah.
It's not like anybody has made anything that is actually for everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe water, if you consider a creator. But we're not going to go there.
That sounds like an entirely different talk. So, you mentioned, and this ties right back into what we were talking about before that little tangent, which, thank you, that was very interesting. Your, like, draw to the craft,
mm-hmm.
being, like, the thing that you do as Masons is the craft. Yes?
Yes.
Great. Cool. I understand
that
much.
He doesn't know. That he could just tell him anything, he wouldn't.
You really could.
We'll tell him about the ponies later.
The ponies.
You get ponies?
We all get a pony.
That's...
the best.
Man.
Naked ponies.
Naked ponies. We ride them bare-breasted. It's horrible.
Okay, now it's starting to look more like I thought it might.
Yeah. You and every other man on the earth.
I mean, okay. So, So your craft, your riding bare-breasted on ponies.
Yes.
Or whatever it is you actually probably do.
And we talk about lipstick and butterflies the entire time.
Okay,
and
now
shoes.
I think you're pulling my leg.
We talk about shoes a lot.
You've talked about way too many things that aren't shoes in this conversation for me to believe that you actually just talk about shoes.
Oh, you have a nice pair of shoes on. So
I do, but like I was at a wedding earlier. Thank you.
Okay.
I try.
Yeah. All
right. If anybody would like to see a picture of these shoes, I might take one and have Eric put it on the website for me. If there's a website.
Should.
I'm really unprepared.
We don't even know if there's a website. I have no idea.
Next question.
We're going to make one.
So the craft, which is not talking about shoes.
Or ponies.
But the craft of Freemasonry. What was it that, like... that drew you to the craft in particular? Was it the like exploration of occult and esoteric elements? Or
yes.
Okay. So like it was more
yes.
the pursuit of that, and who was around the pursuit of that happened to be the community more than it was like finding a community and in that community deciding to pursue that.
Well, for me, yeah, like, I'm not about fraternity. No, I am, and I love that it's a fraternity of, brothers and sisters of like-minded people, but it was definitely the, lure of, and, I think this is kind of what separates us from traditional male masonry, is that we are a little bit more esoteric,
mm-hmm.
especially my lodge, because we practice
yeah,
the Lauderdale ritual. We're very esoteric, and it's, you know, all about the energies, and so that is what was the draw. Like, I think if I had a choice now between, you know, mainstream masonry and L'Adroit Humane, I would probably stay with L'Adroit Humane. I wouldn't have even thought about mainstream masonry because of that.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely, as per my long-winded tale...
Your short,
short
answer. The shortest podcast answer.
Yeah. It'll be, like, edited down to, like, 2 seconds.
I like it.
Like, it was the winter, and...
The end.
Now I'm a mason.
I sought light...
The end.
But no, it's yeah. I think partially because of our roots being with Marie de Rheims
mm-hmm.
and Annie Besant and
Charles Leadbeater,
certainly
George Martin.
Right.
These are real names, right?
No, we just made them up. Juanito Sanchez. He was right up there.
That guy was great.
He was awesome.
They were all a very esoterically minded group. Mm. And there are others that you can Google if you want to know who was all involved in the founding and real beginning of our order. Was it
1890-ish.
In France. And I think because... And certainly... as with any group, the thought processes and...
Kinks.
Sure, let's go with kinks.
Kinks
of
had to
the
be
founders. Well, no, but I mean, the leaders, the founders of any organization, be that a company or a country or a family or what have you, are going to weave themselves into that organization.
Absolutely.
And I certainly think that part of why women were originally allowed in France so long ago, in Le Bois Humain, and then the foundation of it, was because there was a desire to, among humans in general, to do this work. And I think that desire was what kind of birthed the order, more so than is maybe necessary to join something that's already existing and has
mm-hmm.
momentum of its own. You know, you could join any number of groups and not have the specific challenges of flying to LA, you know,
mm-hmm.
for
yeah.
Just
for sure.
to find like-minded folk who you
it's
can
a,
talk
and it's they were searching answers, and the means that they go about it were unique to them, to the theosophists.
Yes.
Say that word. Theosophists.
Yes.
That's a
kind
cool
of
word.
Yeah, and they kind of started it, and there's a lot of question about the, you know, the authenticity of co-masonry because of it, but I found that they really found a way to interweave it, and it's to bring the spirituality back to masonry, which I think was missing for a long time.
And is still, from what I understand, missing in
mm-hmm.
quite a lot of the masculine lodges.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are variances within our order as well.
Same
scales,
as ours.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I also know that there are, for example, Esoterica Lodge here in Portland is
mm-hmm.
clearly an esoterically focused lodge.
Yeah. No spoiler alerts. It's very esoteric.
Yeah. And fantastically like-minded group of guys. And they're absolutely doing the work and on just as much of an esoteric path as anybody that I've met in our order.
Yeah.
And so it's a generalization, certainly, but I think for the purpose of this question, we've answered it.
I think we've exhausted it.
So for you, it was definitely like the pursuit of the work that Masons happen to do in this like esoteric truth-seeking sense.
Yeah.
That drew you to it. And it stands to reason that's why you, like, put so much effort into maintaining your connection to this community to continue, like, pursuing this craft and expanding your knowledge and expanding the overall knowledge of your community of truth seekers.
Mm-hmm.
Because you want to do this work, and you will go to, like, pretty serious lengths to do it. Like, this is...
Yeah, I know that you are super newbie. You have no idea anything about masonry. So I'll just, like, from, like, a little explanation of what it really is from my understanding. It's basically just the betterment of yourself and your soul so that you can, in turn, better humanity. If that makes sense to you.
That, you know, like, that as a concept is pretty clear.
Yeah.
And any group that dedicates themselves to that is just fantastic, no matter how they do it.
I think so, too.
Yeah, I would agree.
So, tell me about, like, where you practice. You travel to great lengths to attend your lodges.
Yes, lodge.
Okay.
And just so everyone on the podcast knows, we are starting a Portland. Right now it's just a study group, but there is energy swirling about here. There's the Dwavalon study group here in Portland.
Momentum happening here. Right now, magic happening.
Yeah. There's a Facebook page.
That's how it all starts.
Ooh.
All great things start with a Facebook page.
If you message it, I will probably respond to you, but you won't know it's me.
What's the Facebook page?
Le Dwavalon Portland.
Portland, okay. Good to know.
So your lodges are... What was the word? Irregular.
Yes.
In that...
just like, yeah, we are.
Sure.
Totally irregular.
So, you are not the only women at your lodge.
No.
What percentage of your lodge is female? Like, what's the mix?
Right now, mine is like about 87% female at this moment. And there's a lot of... Masons who, and I know this happens in mainstream masonry as well, where they initiate, they go up a degree, or they stay in the first degree, and then you don't see them for 2 years, and then they come in, and then, I mean, this just is what it is, you know? So the number could be greater, but just right now, where we're at and where we've been steady for about the last year, been pretty regular with that number. So more women than men right now in my lodge in California.
And that's more of a, like, who's there on a month-to-month basis than an overall
like the
membership.
Regular of our irregular lodge, if you will. The regulars of our irregular organization.
Okay.
Regular irregulars.
Yeah,
like
regular irregulars. Like, we're like a square within a circle.
And, oh, right, because you guys do stuff with geometry.
Yeah.
That's probably
so
symbolic.
It's probably symbolic, but I don't even know anymore.
And how about your lodge, Heather?
We are, you know, in the years that I've been there, we've definitely fluctuated. We've had times where I've been in lodge and it's been about 50-50. I'd say right now we're about 70-30.
Which way?
Women. 70% women, 30% men. But again, there's a number of men who have left the masculine orders for various reasons.
And come to us.
Come to us.
We have a few too.
Yeah. And they also are very interesting people who live interesting lives and have, like, you know, some of them are in India right now or have gone
traveling
to finish their PhD or, you know, or gone and will come back. And I mean, obviously, that's true of all. That's not specific to a gender, just our members in general. But yeah, it kind of fluctuates, but I would say predominantly
female
most of the time. Like, not predominantly. Percentage wise, a larger percentage of. Is that what predominantly
I thought
means?
That's what predominantly
means. Yeah, I think that's what that means.
It sounded right when you said it.
Okay, well, I was right then.
Heather, do you think I've actually asked some of the other members, older, like, not that they're older in age, but older in Masonic age, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
And I get the feeling that we're like about 65% female.
Across the
in
order.
In the Federation.
I don't know that at all.
Yeah, that's what
that
I got. And it's not
right,
an accurate by any means, so nobody call me and scream at me. But I think it's about 65% women in the entire Federation.
And that's in the Ladrahuman chapter?
Yeah, and that's international.
Okay.
It's international. So it's our organization. And we're in Europe, we're in Africa. I mean, we're all over the world.
Right.
So it's mostly 65% women.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, a rough guesstimate from some higher powers than me.
I could probably look it up. If we really want to know.
I don't think the Let's Sit in Silence and like Google Stuff show is a terribly great one.
No, I think I tried that and it didn't work out well.
Hmm.
Okay.
You know, I listen to that every day I drive and don't turn any audio on in my car.
You're just Googling?
No, I'm listening to the sounds of people Googling.
You're thinking of things to Google? Does that count?
Mostly I'm just wishing I had a better side view mirror. The mix at the gender mix at your lodges is predominantly female, but it like varies over time. And the local lodge, as I understand it, is 100% male, which is why
the local
Federation
here is male.
Okay.
Traditional mainstream.
That is a symptom of me not understanding the question.
It's okay.
What is the percentage of your Grand Lodge?
Okay,
or
so
is that what you were talking
about?
The Grand Lodge is
the
chapter,
the
as I was calling it.
It's also
the
Federation.
Grand Lodge is the overarching lodge that oversees all of the lodges beneath it.
And that's Ladrahuman.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, we're all Ladrahuman.
Okay, so cool. That question is answered, and I can
move
on. He's
confusing me, and I know these things. So I'm like, I don't know anymore. I don't even know. Let's just have another drink.
Oh, this is trouble.
Well,
So, in your mixed gender lodges, is there tension caused by having men and women work together? Like, is it hard for boys and girls to be Masons
to
at the same time?
No. Like, I think it's quite beautiful, because we get to see something really amazing happen when you have the masculine and the feminine energies mixed. And it's like what Heather had touched upon earlier, that we all have masculine and feminine energy within us. It's just the balance. And what makes one person more feminine or masculine than the other is just more of the energy than the former, you know, the form of the latter. And I think that when you work together in a ritualistic setting, and ceremonial magic. Oh, not really magic. I don't want to say that word. But, like, in a ceremonial setting, it's just really beautiful to have those two opposing forces integrated into one, which is kind of like the purpose of life, you know, like to integrate opposites into that unity. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but that's...
I liked it.
Yeah. It's kind of where I'm feeling it. I don't know.
It's like strength and diversity kind of thing.
Exactly.
That is how humans have survived.
Yeah. I mean, there's only 50% male and 50% women, and there's no other options, so work together. It's kind of nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think... I absolutely agree. Like, having both genders in the lodge to me just feels right and certainly doesn't cause any more, I don't know how the question was worded now,
tension.
Any more tension than exists between humans in general. I mean, like, there's always going to be tensions that arise and you sublimate them and learn from them and,
but so, like, even in the case of romantic entanglements, as is written
so
on this...
love triangles
so
in your triangle?
I think I get that one.
You got that one? Okay, good.
It does happen, and I've never been in a lodge that does not have that sort of...
married
interaction.
Couples.
Yeah.
We have a couple married couples, and they work... It's like... any lodge, when you walk into lodge, you leave the outside behind and you're in a very sacred spot.
And I would say to the anybody who's in a masculine lodge, I mean, certainly there must be some dating that at least has occurred or could occur within your lodge as well. welcome to 2017.
Yes,
like,
girl.
This is not a
yes.
challenge that's going to be specific to
women
and men.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly, yes, there are, like, tensions that arise between any number of relationship structures within a lodge or any other organization, but I don't think that's unique to the Dwapaman.
Yeah. And I've never witnessed anything. I mean,
so you're saying that when, like, Tom and Becky Mason, like, are having a tiff in their
relationship,
like, in their relationship, it doesn't completely distract you from your ability to seek the truth of the universe?
Well, Tom and Becky Mason leave their shit outside, and they come in, and they're Masons. They're no longer Tom and Becky. They're just Mason and Mason, so...
But they're different genders. How can they do that? I'm sorry. I'll
it's
stop.
Just they're humans, and that's the same species. So I guess it works. I don't know.
Guess
so you're against there being
adults.
Like dog Masons, but humans are okay.
My cat is a Mason. I she's totally a Mason.
And how
and
does
she
your lodge
knows,
master
she,
feel, lodge master feel about?
She
that?
Actually knows way more about the universe, so we take advice from her.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
She is.
Cats are
right,
cats.
She's the supreme leader of the world, of the universe. She's the grand architect.
I mean,
she
that's
it's my cat. Yeah.
That's true of every cat, according
well, I'm
to
done
their
with,
person.
I'm done with everything now.
Yeah.
I've found the purpose.
That's
I
it.
Can leave.
Take
that's
care
it.
Of that cat. Okay, so I guess that kind of covers it for how does being a female Mason in a like
yeah
mixed
men and women
gender
working
community.
Together.
What about, like, other differences in, like, background and perspective? Does your Grand Lodge allow atheists to become members? Heather?
Yes.
Yes,
of course we do.
Okay.
We do. We do not hold any dogmatic beliefs. But we do have on our altar, all volumes of sacred, VSL, in our lodge might be different.
So there are different ritual options within the Dwapaman.
VSK, yeah, it's different.
So we have the American Federation and Saddle Evergreen Triangle. And Valerie has the Lauderdale ritual in LA.
So we keep our books, our sacred books, open during rituals. And we have the Masonic Bible open, as well as other works that people would feel. So if an atheist were to join, and they could, you know, they don't have a Bible that they follow, but they could put a notebook, or they could put any philosophy that they follow, like Socrates, you know, his works on there, whatever, you know. It's anyone who's seeking light authentically. We
okay.
welcome into our federation. And, I mean, we do have a pretty rigorous screening. You know, not just anybody can just walk in and be like, hey, I want to be a part of your organization.
We go through the same process as the male lodges, to the best of my understanding.
Super rigorous. I mean, it took me a year of interviews before I was even called in for a formal interview. Let's put it like that. It was about a year and a half before I was initiated. So, I mean, they make sure you're on it for the right reason. But definitely, we're not dogmatic. And we welcome everybody, whether they are male or female, Catholic, Christian, atheist,
Satanist,
Hindu, Satanist, yes, American,
Catist,
Colombian, whatever nationality they are, we welcome everybody. We're a humanist organization, if you will.
Couldn't
That's
have said
way.
Anything better than that.
Awesome. Cool. So, is there language about freedom of conscience in your ritual and obligations? And also, what does freedom of conscience mean?
What is that? So, freedom of conscience is basically you are free to think whatever you want to think, and you are free to believe whatever you want to believe, as long as it doesn't infringe upon others' right to freedom of consciousness, or right to be who they are, or human. So I don't know that there's actually wording in the ritual about freedom of consciousness. I know we've talked about it. It's been in things that we've discussed. It's not really in the ritual, but it's just let people believe what they want to believe, and just allow people to be who they are, you know, and not
and
judge them on it.
And it's
ridicule.
Men.
Yeah.
So it's basically a, like, Masonic translation of the philosophy live and let live.
Well, it's not really Masonic, because the the traditional male masonry does not allow atheists to join their organization.
Oh.
And they are more inclined to the Catholicism, Christian order. I don't know if some of the lodges locally or you know, anywhere have kind of changed that, but
so
it certainly was birthed out of a culture, society, where
thought you were
going to
say
Christianity.
That would not be appropriate here. It's a bad word. Stay away from that word.
Where Christianity was the dominant thought structure. So, in my opinion, it was part of its... It's necessary for its own existence and acceptance socially to have an appearance of being Christian in nature.
Yeah.
But at its heart, it's not, a religious organization at all.
By any means.
But there are certainly things that, like, have made it more acceptable throughout the ages to have it be... And also because people that are, you know, that were making the rituals largely came out of that belief system, so there's certainly some overflow into it.
They
thought
all good men must be Christians, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that was the times that they were in, and the places that it started, and...
So it sounds like some of the chapters of Grand Lodge, some of the orders of Freemasonry have a much more, like, structured, you have to, like, think a certain way and share the same cultural context as us, barrier to entry.
Yeah. So it's like the freedom of consciousness.
Which, okay.
Or at least be open to, like, using those symbols, even if they don't resonate with you. Basically, like, be willing to... What, I don't know what to say. Take an oath on a Bible?
Yeah.
Swear on a Bible.
Swear
on
a Bible.
When you're in the... In the courtroom, and you've got the Bible out.
Yeah,
that's
like,
what we use.
Well, so, like, L'Adroit Humane, you can swear on any work of literature that speaks to you and that you believe is
so.
Bible.
If I were to
a blank book, if you consider that to be truth, like that is your prerogative.
Yeah.
Okay, so if I were to like partake in a Masonic ritual that involved me swearing on a book, I could I could pick a text that is personally sacred to me.
In L'Adroit Humain, which is called you've got to
remember, in your order
is very different.
We have
a lot of the same principles, and we do a lot of the same rituals, and we follow a lot of the same, adhere to the same policies, but with this exception.
It's a very fine point where, like...
There's a pretty significant difference, really.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to use a text that you find personally sacred, rather than the one that the organization finds. So it's more important that it has... So it's important to the organization that the act that you're undertaking has meaning and truth to you as the participant.
Yes,
then
you find it sacred. Because, you know, you're not going to swear on something. Like, if you didn't believe in the Holy Bible and you swore on it, it wouldn't be validated. It wouldn't be truth to you, you know, because you don't really believe in it, so you'll swear on it. But to take something that is sacred is the best word you could use to you and defines your beliefs and who you are as a person and then swear on it, it takes on a whole different meaning.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And in the converse, if you have 100 people in a room who, like, if you have one person in a room who, like, swears in on a Bible because that's the book you use, and the Bible has no, like, personal truth to them, it could stand to reason that you would have 100 people in a room who all felt that way when swearing in on a Bible, but all, like, were under the impression that it'd be important for the community that you swear it in on a Bible, even though nobody there actually felt that way, because it's an underlying precept of the culture.
Yeah, kind of takes away the significance and the the heaviness of
it. It almost sounds like
gravity of the situation.
Like, if you're not really believing what you're doing, then it's almost pageantry.
Wow, that's a great word for somebody who's not into masonry.
Okay.
No, but yeah, I mean, you nailed it. That's exactly it.
Yep.
Yeah, it's all for show. If it's not for the
internal.
Heart. Yeah. Oh yeah. Like you said, initiation happens internally way before you step foot in a lodge.
I think I'm starting to get it.
Starting to get it.
Like, a little bit.
The external expression of it would be less important or less,
significant.
Impactful. Yeah. It wouldn't, the external wouldn't mirror the internal. If the internal process resonated with you and the external process was on something that you did not consider sacred, the two would not mirror themselves.
Okay, yeah.
I think he gets
like,
it. I don't know if he gets it. I'm not sure that he gets
it. You lost me a little bit there, but what I got out of that is, like, you can't seek truth if you don't believe in the actions that you're taking.
That's also very well put.
Okay, cool. I'm gonna, like...
We're gonna invite you to ride our ponies.
Oh, hell yes.
You can be an honorary guest.
On the ponies?
On the pony.
Can I swear in on a pony?
Yes, if you find it sacred enough.
Oh, dear God. I'm so glad this is an actual question I have to answer right now. Next question.
He's going to show up at lodge. Where's my pony? And they're all going to look at you. Like, what did you do?
Well, Portland can...
Portland is weird. We're going to keep
it
weird.
A whole new game here. Kids.
Pony Lodge.
Pony Lodge.
That's the name.
Ponies for all.
If I can have a pony, I'm in.
Oh, we might have got our first guy.
Here we go.
Here we go.
Second, actually.
Second. We got one coming.
Yeah.
What?
Initiated three months ago.
Oh, but for the port.
Into Pony Lodge?
Possible. Possibly.
No, sorry.
We're making Portland Masons.
Okay. We are talking amongst ourselves and not acknowledging the mic in the room.
Please spare me the Mason gossip. I really can't relate to that.
Okay.
So I think I have one more question for you about, like, your like, lodge action that you do. And then I think we should take a quick break.
Yeah.
And,
drink some more.
Drink some water. Drink some more.
I said more, but I think he needs water.
I need water.
I've been talking
a lot. It's almost empty now.
I'll be keeping an eye on it.
Oh, boy.
And if it gets empty, I will give you more water.
Anyway, hopefully we fix this in post.
I think we can edit that out. Our water conversation.
Is,
riveting.
This is a podcast about esoterica and beer, so I think water has a place.
I think we have places in the
more established... I don't know. I feel weird about using the word mainstream.
Masonry,
okay. In some Freemasonry, it is said that Masonry can make good men better. Is there an equivalent tagline in your organization?
No.
Well, it's not like an official, but... possibly United in Diversity. I know I've seen it on our webpage.
Yeah, that's a good one.
We don't have an official.
It's not as much of a tagline.
Yeah.
It's kind of a slogan, I guess.
Yeah, we don't really have a thing.
We don't have a thing like that. We don't do a whole lot of marketing or advertising.
Yeah.
We are receptive to people who are interested and come and wish to pursue their path, but we're not necessarily out there creating taglines of that sort. If anything, I would say the closest thing we have to that is just the general statement, which is part of the ritual and also on the website and elsewhere, of just working to the perfection of humanity.
Perfect.
Okay.
Perfect.
Okay.
That's it. We're gonna put that on a bumper sticker.
Working towards the perfection of humanity.
Ponies for
the people.
Ponies for perfection. Perfect pony lodge.
Perfect ponies for the people in Portland. This went very wrong somewhere.
It really did.
I'm sorry, and you're welcome.
Thank you.
So, here's a word that I barely comprehend its meaning in the context of what we're talking about. Your ritual. What is it? What am I allowed to know about it, not as a Mason? And from where does it come? Can you tell us about where your ritual comes from? Is my question as it is written.
Okay, so... France.
Okay.
From France, the end.
So we do have different rituals that we work, as I touched on earlier. But the original founder, you know what order he came out of?
Georges Martin.
Yeah.
He
was a Freemason.
He was from
France.
He was French.
Man, this is a long haul here. We're getting foggy. Georges Martin was a Freemason, and the ritual that was originally done in Le Droit Humain came from his order. So that's where it came from. Throughout the years, it's adopted a number of different options that you could work, such as the American Federation ritual and the Lauderdale ritual.
And the Georges Martin ritual, which they study... they practice. I know in Miami they use the Georges Martin ritual. In my lodge in California, we use the Lauderdale ritual, and then yours in Seattle uses the American ritual.
The American Federation.
Yeah.
And some of those are more flowery than others. Some of them are more simple. You can also do the work in French or English. You have the option. And each lodge upon its creation can make that decision, from what I understand. I've never gone through that process myself, but... other than that, obviously I'm not able to confirm this and wouldn't want to put anybody in the position of trying to confirm this, but from what I understand, it's very similar to mainstream or masculine or whatever word you want to use, Freemasonry.
Different rituals for different lodges throughout the world.
Yeah. But we all have at our core the similar degree work. We also do the Scottish Rite and...
York.
And York.
Yeah.
Rituals. So I know that doesn't mean a whole lot to you, Cadman, but it will to some of the listeners, probably.
If there is one listener still with us at this point, besides my cat.
Oh, yeah, she's really definitely sad. Monitoring it.
She thinks we're idiots. It's done.
So. I mean, if we were smart, we'd have, like, big dumb things taking care of us all the time.
Yeah.
And, like,
grooming me.
Grooming
me.
And feeding
yeah.
and cleaning up after nonstop in exchange for basically nothing.
Yeah. It's true. We clearly
we
know
just
nothing.
Have to look cute, which we obviously can all do.
Yeah.
You can't see us, but we're cute.
We're cute.
As discussed,
take
my shoes are pretty nice.
He's got nice shoes, and we're pretty cute. And we have ponies. I think we should take a break.
So, we are taking a break, and... After this, we are going to talk about some... Nope, I don't understand these questions enough to talk about them in advance. Some more Mason stuff. Break time. They told me that they would cut out whatever happens next and we don't have to stop recording. I hope that's true.
Eric just said, feel free to sign off. Talk about the website Poop Tacos.
What does that mean?
He might mean robo? No. Poop tacos.
That's... Poop tacos?
Alright, so we are back, wonderful podcast listeners, and we are going to wrap things up with a lightning round. We have 10 questions, and we're going to try and get through them all. We're definitely going to hit the last one. But first, Heather... in mainstream Mason, oh no, we covered that one. Have your esoteric or occult interests, which were a big draw for you in seeking out Masonry, grown since your initiation?
Yes, absolutely. They have grown since my initiation in Freemasonry, but also just since I kind of came to my senses about a lot of things in life.
Yeah.
And I think once you look past the layer of what you see in reality, then you can't help but keep searching. So absolutely. I am not a member of any other orders currently, but I am interested in them and would like to at some point in time.
Yes.
Valerie?
Me tenfold, yeah. I'm super interested. I am a member with the Rosicrucian Fellowship, and I am trying to get involved with another organization. So it's the search for knowledge continues always till the end of time.
Cool.
The end.
And in your pursuits, how have your interactions with mainstream Freemasons gone? Like, how's that been, Valerie?
I've only encountered one sourpuss, and... I just kind of tried to talk to him logically, and when it didn't work out, I said, okay, well, love and light, and God bless you, brother, and have a nice life, peace out. That was it. Everybody else has really been very accepting and open, believe it or not. Even if they're not accepting and open in public, they are super accepting and open in private conversations, so.
Kind of like that nobody actually believes in the book scenario we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Basically.
Heather?
I haven't actually had any negative experiences at all. Everybody that I've talked to has been very open and welcoming and curious. The correlation between the path of Prince Hall into the Order has been brought up in reference to Le Droit Humain a number of times.
Yeah.
And most of the time I'm met with curiosity that a tentative curiosity, because I think there is an interest in general in what the other gender is up to, perhaps, but obviously challenging for communication reasons. But very, very positive, and definitely from my end, as we recognize male Masons, it's always felt like I was speaking to a brother.
Yeah.
And so in your time pursuing Masonry, have you noticed an overall change in how your interactions with these more traditional, can I say traditional?
Yeah, you can say traditional.
Masons have gone? Like, has there been any growth on that end, or is it always just started out kind of nice?
I've seen a lot of growth. I definitely have seen more acceptance, and I've actually been in... this question will come up later, but I think I've been in the situation where there have been members of the traditional order in a lodge setting, and they were not supposed to be there, but they joined us anyway to talk about their excitement for the future and the possibility of co-masonry becoming sort of a norm, if you will.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
So it's like definitely been a process.
It's a process. I mean, it's a slow, slow road. But just like Prince Hall was a super slow road, if you think of, you know, how long Masonry's been around till when they were accepted, it's going to be a long haul. But there's a lot more interest in maybe, you know, maybe we never will. Maybe the two shall never meet. But there's a lot more acceptance and genuinity.
Sure,
that's the word I'm trying to think. Genuine acceptance. Let's just leave it like that. Move on. Thanks.
So, in your lodge and Masonic practice, do you learn ceremonial magic techniques?
I have never practiced ceremonial magic, so I don't know what in our ritual or lodge work may actually be ceremonial magic, so I'm not the best person to answer that.
And what about techniques involving sacred geometry or the art of memory?
Yes and yes.
Okay. Valerie,
yes,
same questions.
Yes. Yes. And I am only a fellow craft, so if there is ceremonial magic that happens past that, I could not say, but I have not encountered it just yet.
Okay. And what can you tell us about Saint Germain and his relationship with your Masonic tradition?
Well, Saint Germain is known as the master of initiatic ceremony, and he's the master of the seven rays, so to speak. So everybody, all of humanity is each on a certain ray. So whether it be the arts, the science, mathematics, whatever it might be, we are all on one of these rays. And he is like the perfected, he's like the master of all masters. He's mastered all the seven rays, and so he is, you know, the perfected one. And I know that American Federation, American Ritual does not really...
The one I practice.
The one that Heather joins is with doesn't really discuss it much, because it is more of a theosophical person, you know, of entity, or I don't know how to say the word. It's more of a theosophical background. So in the Lauderdale Ritual, we do recognize him. And he does reside in our lodge.
Okay. And I think I'm going to have to cut to the end here and ask what I think is a pretty odd question. But I'm going to go with it. Can you share with us, your uninitiated listeners, your lodge's secret pancake recipe?
I'm unfortunately, it is one of our highest obligations, and I could not. It's super secret. It's like the most secret Masonic thing that there is.
And it's just, there's no way, right, Heather? We can't tell our secret pancake recipe. There's just no way.
I actually got permission from our Right Worshipful Master.
You did! Oh my goodness.
I requested it specifically, and I have that for you. Masonic Secrets happening right now.
This is crazy. This
on
is like
my alchemical
breaking news.
Shocked. I'm
breaking
shocked.
News.
Never
this is
before
shocking.
Witnessed anywhere outside of the secret and initiated Masonic Lodge is this pancake recipe that Heather is going to read to you right now.
All right, secret pancake recipe. Make your usual batter using melted butter instead of shortening. Stir in grated apples and chopped walnuts and some cinnamon.
The end.
The end.
Masonic secrets unlocked.
Is your mind blown?
A little bit, yeah. So, how would you feel about an all-female lodge? Is that something that you would join?
There are all-female lodges, and I personally would never join. It's just promoting the thing I don't want to promote, which
division.
Is division. Yeah.
Yeah, as you were saying, like, you find that the like mixing of perspectives and ideas
yeah.
is what helps your community of truth seekers like really
yeah, absolutely.
Activate.
How can you know the truth of humanity if you're only getting 50% of the answers? You know, like there's a whole 50% that you're not asking or seeking or talking with or discussing, and the mixtures of on the esoteric level, the energies is just the balance. You know, you can't be balanced if you're all water and no air. You know, do you understand now? The
yeah,
elements.
That,
okay.
Well, I mean,
yeah.
no.
Yeah.
But I'm going to nod my head
yeah.
like I do.
Like you have to have a balance of all of the possible elements and energies. I think so. So
yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Okay. And do you, so in your, like, irregular lodge, do you recognize mainstream Freemasonry? Like, the groups that have the stricter rules
about... Of course.
About,
yeah.
Okay.
Yes,
so like,
we do. Because we are Freemasonry for men and women is often how we will describe ourselves. And we absolutely allow anyone of any gender or identity to come in. So we absolutely recognize the male-only lodges. If they wanted to visit, they could.
Yeah.
It doesn't go both ways, and I understand that, and that's complex, and I get it.
Yeah.
But we absolutely would welcome them.
I mean,
we would have to go through
we have to
the process of proving them as a...
Oh,
you know, and,
of a Mason, a real Mason.
Yeah.
But we have to because, you know, all of these organizations are based on the ancient mystery schools, you know, that were studied in the time of Pythagoras and of Hermes Trismegistus and all, you know, going back into time, all these ancient schools of mysteries. And Masonry is one of the last remnants of those. So being co-Masons, you know, we follow the same school. So if we didn't recognize them, it would be pretty foolish and asinine. It really wouldn't make any sense if we didn't, so...
Agreed.
Yeah.
And, so if a, and so you do allow visitation to your
of
lodge.
Of course,
and
yeah.
that makes sense, really, because if you're about, like, building this community of Masonry, then as long as you're a Mason, you're a Mason,
exactly.
even if you don't think that I'm a Mason.
Yeah. We have visitations from, traditional Masonic male Masonic lodges, and we also have visitation from the Grand Lodge of Belgium, which is all female Masons visit our lodge all the time, and we have members who are married to masculine Masons, and they will come in with their wives or their husband, or not their husbands in our lodge, but their wives, and they will sometimes sit in through the beginning, and then when we open lodge, they will politely walk out because it is against their rules to be in an open lodge, clandestine lodge, and we totally respect that and honor that.
We understand.
100%. Yeah.
Okay. So in getting visits from male members of male-only lodges that may not recognize your lodge as legitimate. Wait, regular?
Either way.
What? Okay. The words that I read earlier.
We get the point.
Does
the
your
words
lodge
that I read earlier?
Does your lodge take any measures to, like, keep them from getting in trouble?
No, we put it on Facebook. We take a picture of them.
We send it to Fox News.
Yeah. Alert, alert. No, oh, of course. Yeah, we respect humanity to such a level that we would never intentionally cause strife for any human, much less a brother.
Yeah. And one thing that I found particularly kind of comical is the right word, but it made me chuckle reading that question, hearing that question, because in order for us to quote unquote out a brother to his master lodge or whatever the correct terminology is, they would have to communicate with us.
Yeah, they don't. We don't know their numbers. They're not going to answer.
They're really not going to do. So it's kind of a non-issue. But we also would absolutely be prudent and careful and respectful.
Absolutely.
Of someone else's need for privacy.
That is very considerate of you.
Thanks.
Okay.
We're considerate. If not, if only. I guess that's the right word.
So if a like traditional male mason visited your lodge, but didn't want to be like outed to
his community
mm-hmm. as somebody who
called
is
to the carpet.
Open to the idea of like permitting women to be masons
or to participate
in the craft, and they wanted to
or
keep
even
their
just asking questions.
Yeah,
yeah.
So if this person came to your lodge and wanted their visit to be like kept a secret and off the books, can you do that?
Oh,
or
yeah,
is there, like, okay.
No, we don't tell it. We wouldn't tell anybody that we don't. There's not like a bulletin that we can be like, so and so, right worshipful master was sitting here with us and they played with us today. No, like we don't.
They wrote the poem.
There's just no way anybody would ever know. So
yeah.
We welcome all brethren to join us and ask questions, and feel free to maybe call that curiosity, or even maybe hopefully inspire them to think outside the box a little bit.
You are welcome, and we'd love to meet you.
Come to us.
For the ponies. Stay for the ponies. My taglines are just falling flat.
Yeah.
All
I
right.
Mean, yeah, I can't top ponies. I think I'm just going to call it here. And we're done.
The end.
And,
whoa!
With that,
we're done.
We have reached the end of our interview.
That's
and
great.
Welcome back, Eric, who
thanks,
is here
thanks.
To close the podcast.
Thanks for listening to this hopefully amazing interview. Do you guys feel like you're amazing?
Always.
Always.
I certainly feel like they're amazing.
He's amazed.
Cadman looks like he's been enlightened.
I think he's going to join one of our organizations.
Only,
we don't know which
only
one.
If there's ponies.
It
yeah,
might be
they,
ours because we
I was
ponies.
Promised ponies.
Oh, well, we can't.
And bare naked pony riding, so.
Oh, we definitely.
You can't compete, guys?
No,
yeah,
we only have goats.
Sorry.
We're goats only.
Oh, that's
all right,
tough.
So.
I like goats.
Thank you for listening to My Alchemical Bromance. You can find us on the web at myalchemicalbromance.com. Yes!
Oh, and Heather said that there was a Portland Mason study group thing on Facebook that you could reach out, and it can be found by searching for.
Just Google Le Droit Humain Portland or Le Droit Humain.
Spell it.
Le Droit Humain. L-E.
Well, we'll link to it.
Yeah, there we go.
Alright, you can find a link to that in the podcast.
Thanks Cadman. I'm sure you've been an amazing guest host. Has he been an amazing guest?
Yes, he's been super amazing.
It sounds like you have a
we
much
filled
better
his head with lies.
Podcasting voice than I do.
Yeah, and I hope that you didn't, like, Joey out at any point.
A little bit, maybe.
Okay, cool.
We talked about my shoes.
We
yes!
No, we need to put
do
a picture, we said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, we'll do that. But first of all, let's stop recording.
All right. Goodbye. Bye. I'm gonna go.